Good morning. Welcome to the program. Hi, I'm Dr. Morgan. This program is Health Essentials. The phone number here at the station is 903-586-5257. This one I liked, and we'll get to the punchline momentarily, but there's a study. Wait a second. We got a phone call. That's so much more important. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Dr. Morgan.
Hello. Good morning.
Say, I got a friend of mine that lives up in Missouri, where I used to live, and she's come down with cirrhosis of the liver, and I'm sure she's probably never drank in her life. And they think that it's because of the medicine that she's been taking.
What is she taking?
I really don't know for sure, but when I lived up there, they were bouncing her around on cholesterol-reducing drugs.
Okay.
And anyway, I just wonder if there's anything that she could do to maybe help her liver out without just giving up and dying with cirrhosis.
You don't really have to have alcohol to produce cirrhosis of the liver these days. All you have to have is carbohydrates. So if a person consumes more carbohydrate than what their body can handle, you're kind of asking for eventually. And so what that would look like is a person tends to gain more weight than what would be ideal for them. I read an article this morning that talked about cirrhosis of the liver in a sedentary lifestyle. And I realize, you know, if she's got cirrhosis of the liver, she probably doesn't feel like a world-class athlete right now, does she?
No, well, just a few days ago, she was in ICU. I guess she's doing better now.
What is her age?
She's probably mid-70s.
Do you know how the Bible says in Leviticus that the life is in the blood?
Yeah.
Well, when it comes to cirrhosis of the liver, you've got to greatly speed the life of the blood through the liver, which means you've got to do whatever it takes to greatly improve blood flow. And I'm almost positive. I can't remember all the numbers in my mind, but let me give you a couple examples. If somebody was probably very, very sedentary, like not really moving a lot, they're probably going to get about 200 gallons a day of their own blood. You know, it's just the same 8 pints that keep circulating over and over again. But if they're sedentary, that's probably the best they're going to do is get about 200 gallons of blood a day passing through their liver. But that's not good. What you want is you want at least 2,000 gallons going through the liver a day. In order to get 2,000 gallons a day, you've got to have to move your body. Does that make sense?
Right.
Do you think there's any possibility that she can get her body moving?
I don't know. When I lived up there, she was very, very active.
You're looking at stuff like getting bicycle pedals, pedaling while you're sitting down all day long. It may take a minimum of an hour and a half. Because unless you can get the blood flow really moving through the liver, I don't see how cirrhosis can ever disappear and go away. But for the sake of conversation, what I'll do is I'll try to answer it more from a perspective that sounds a whole lot easier. Okay. Number one, she needs to eat 2 meals a day. That's called intermittent fasting. So if she eats all the food that she's ever going to eat in about a 4 to 6 hour window, what that will do is that'll create a caloric deficit, and her body will say, great, where are we going to get this fuel from? And the body might say, oh, there's plenty of fat here in the liver. Let's take it from there. So that's one technique. Number two, if she were to eat maybe one salad with some protein, and that could be fish from the ocean, that could be chicken, that could be eggs, that would be another way that we could help the liver. Foods that are really, really good for the liver are going to be stuff like avocados and sweet potatoes. Does she like those?
I'm sure she does.
There's an herb called milk thistle. There's an herb called curcumin or turmeric. There's one called rosemary. All those are very beneficial to helping the liver. If she could eat liver and onions twice a week, that would directly help the liver. There was one study that I read years ago that showed that a person that has cirrhosis of the liver and or a fatty liver too, they are grossly deficient in B vitamins. So she could take B vitamins. If she tried what's called a castor oil pack, that's where you take a cotton flannel cloth that's probably, 8 inches or 10 inches by 12 inches, drench it in castor oil and just lay it directly over the liver, cover it with saran wrap and use a heating pad on top of it. That increases blood flow to the liver, which is what you want. Usually with cirrhosis of the liver, there's going to be a buildup of toxic iron. So if a doctor did a test called a ferritin level, he would probably find that her ferritin levels were probably a little bit higher than what they should be. So to give you a reference point, ferritin is the molecule that helps grab on to old rusted iron that's in the body. So at least that's my interpretation in your friend's case here. So when ferritin levels are between 20 and 30, it's just nearly impossible for a person to ever develop dementia or Alzheimer's. But when ferritin grows to between 120 and 130, that's where you see all the dementia or all the cognitive decline or the Alzheimer's. Because what happens is the old iron begins to rust. And rusting iron is a good way to wreck the brain and the liver at the same time. I think onions are one of the most excellent foods when you've got cirrhosis. I would say anytime she needs something sweet to eat, and she's a normal human being like the rest of us, then we can give her a bowl of strawberries or a bowl of blueberries or cherries or pomegranate, stuff like that. Raspberries, blackberries. But unless you can greatly improve the blood flow through the liver, it makes it really tough to cure cirrhosis. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Well, I appreciate you. I will forward this stuff on to them, and they can...
Well, you're a great friend trying to help your friend in Missouri. Yeah. What a good man you are.
I can only try.
Well, that does count for something. Doesn't the Bible say make every effort?
It does.
Mm-hmm. So you're making an effort to help her. That's a good thing.
All right. Well, I appreciate you.
You're welcome. Have a good day, sir. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. I came across this article right here, and I'll just make it short and to the point. But it's got some good information in it. The title of the article is Fighting Colds with Garlic. And, of course, in the abstract, they say, according to the WHO, which is the World Health Organization, I believe that is the medical/health arm of the United Nations, the World Health Organization says there is absolutely no evidence whatsoever that garlic can fight the coronavirus. But the point is, they've never investigated whether or not it will. So where do these stories come from about garlic being able to inhibit viruses? Well, one of them could be from a study that was published in the year 2001. It's called Advances in Therapy. And that particular study, which was conducted by a British biochemist by the name of Peter Josling, a supplement containing a compound in garlic protected people from the common cold, which common colds are caused by coronaviruses. That would be one class that would do it. Okay. The gentleman's name is Peter Josling, and we could probably say that he's quite the garlic expert since he wrote a book about the positive health effects of garlic. It's called The Heart of Garlic. And I looked it up. You can find it on Amazon.com, which you probably have never heard of Amazon.com. And if you were to go on YouTube, I think there's some lectures or commentary from him. Well, back in the 1990s, Josling founded the Garlic Center. And what he did was he conducted research. And here's his study right here. And yes, let me see. I can't remember. I was trying to think of who funded the study. It might have been a company that grew garlic. I can't remember. We'll have to look that one up. But anyway, he had two groups of individuals, you know, human beings. There were 73 humans or subjects in each group. And for 12 weeks, the subjects in one group took a placebo capsule every day, while the subjects in the other group, they took an allicin capsule, which is from garlic, which you know full well that if you're taking a capsule that's a placebo, it doesn't smell like garlic. So I would think that they would know that garlic is in the capsule just because it smells strong. So allicin is a sulfur-containing compound that's found in garlic. It's also found in onions. It's in leeks and chives and lower concentrations. But the breakdown products of allicin, that's what causes garlic to smell so strong. And so the supplement that Joslin used was called Alimax, and I think it's still on the market. Here's the results. All right, just for your consideration, I'm not trying to overpromise anything to you, but just maybe there's something in garlic that could be of great benefit. Okay? The subjects who took the garlic supplement, and this is the other part, I meant to look it up, but I couldn't find it because I wanted to find out what time of the year. So if it was like this time of the year, like November, December, isn't that when all the colds and flus and we get all these flare-ups? Yeah, okay. Here we go. The subjects who took the garlic supplement, out of 73 of them, 24 cases of a cold were reported during the experiment. In the other group of 73 that took the placebo, there were 65 reported cases of a cold during this 12-week period. Okay? Now here's a punchline. In the garlic group, the subjects were ill for an average of 1.52 days when they caught a cold. So do you know what that means? That means you say, oh no, I've got a cold, I don't feel great. It lasts for a day and a half, essentially, if you take the garlic. All right. In the placebo group, those that had colds were sick for an average of 5.01 days. Let's just round it down to 5 days. So you tell me, if you get sick, a day and a half versus 5 days. Well, the one that is 5 days, just think of all the joy and pleasure you could have by sneezing nonstop, having drainage down the back of your throat. You get to experience just a lovely fever. You feel horrible, achy and sore. You can't breathe through your nose. Did I already mention that? So you already know how it works out. Garlic has been shown to be good and beneficial. One of the other things that I noticed about the study was, and I know this is going to make sense to you, when a person becomes ill with a cold, there's always a risk that they could develop another additional infection, either from a different virus or from a bacteria. You know what I mean? Because what happens is when you have a cold, it weakens the tissues of the body, whether it's the sinus passages, the nose, the back of the throat, the lungs. Well, you don't want a cold developing into, say, pneumonia, where you start out with a virus, it weakened the body, and you run down, and all of a sudden there's a window of opportunity for bacteria to start growing inside of you. Next thing you know, you're coughing up green and yellow stuff. But that's what they showed. They showed that with the garlic, the chances of getting a reinfection or a different infection from a bacteria was just non-existent in the supplemental garlic group, which, to me, that's a different selling point. So besides your cold only lasting 1.5 days versus 5 days, and a lot less chance of getting a cold in the first place because of garlic, the chance of reinfection was really low. Now, if I was a business owner like, let me see, what would be a big business? I'll just say Ford. Manufacture automobiles. Do you really think that the assembly line is going to be great if one-third of the people are out sick with a cold for 5 days? Well, no, of course not. Anyway, that's just kind of food for thought right there. So, you know, one of the oldest remedies, I still remember that and one of the Egyptian pharaoh's tombs, they have a room next to the burial chamber. And this is where they place all the items that are going to be very, very important to the royal pharaoh in the next life. But I remember one of the archaeologists, when he discovered the burial or the room that had all the items ready for the next life, one of them was a jar that was filled with cloves of garlic, and they were fermented in raw honey. Could you imagine a jar of honey with cloves of garlic that was 3,000 years old, or whatever the number is, maybe 2,500, I really don't know, 3,500 maybe. Could you imagine the archaeologist taking one of the cloves out and putting it in his mouth and chewing it up and saying it tasted divine? Isn't that amazing? What food would you tell me that could last that long? Would a Pop-Tart last that long? Would a donut? No, obviously not. They'd probably deteriorate. But anyway, and that's one of the oldest remedies of all time. There's a lot of people that do that. They just simply take raw cloves of garlic, and they put them in a dark jar, and then they cover them with raw honey. And I don't know if you know this or not, but all the unique beneficial bacteria that are necessary to live as a human being, you know, all the good microbiota or microbiome or flora that live in your gut, every single one of them is found in raw honey. So these studies on raw honey improving health, some of me wonders if maybe that's from the good beneficial microbiome that it's helping to improve. But the point that I'm making is if you take raw cloves of garlic and put them in a dark, maybe a tinted jar, or you keep it covered up with a cloth, what you're doing is you're letting the honey do its work. It's going to ferment those cloves of garlic to preserve them and to make sure they have a great potency. So that's really the way it goes. The moment you feel like you're starting to come down with something, or maybe you're feeling off, that's where you would take a couple of those cloves of raw garlic that have fermented for probably at least a month, give or take, and you would chew them up instantly. And then, you know, it's not a scientific study what I'm telling you, but in the real world, if somebody says, that was amazing, I did so much better than what my normal course is, okay, well, there you go. All right. Study number two. This is the largest meta-analysis study that I've seen on the consumption of coffee that protects individuals against developing cancer. And this is a short one, and I'm not going to go into huge detail, but it is interesting. So what I want you to consider is there is a substance in coffee called caffeine. But what I want you to consider that you may not hear of is there's probably easily 100 other unique compounds that might actually act as antioxidants, or they might be of a benefit to human cells. And so just listen to this right here. Coffee drinkers are several scores of a percent less likely to develop liver cancer, prostate cancer, and three other types of cancer than people who do not drink coffee. This finding comes from the prestigious Chinese meta study. What did they say, prestigious? That was published in Scientific Reports. Okay. The researchers swept together data from 105 epidemiological cancer studies, and they reanalyzed them. In the studies that the Chinese dug up, the indications of the protective effect of coffee were strong for liver cancer, prostate cancer, and endometrial cancer, which you cannot see the colored charts that I'm looking at right now because it's radio. But basically, they look at the intake of coffee as in the number of cups of coffee per day, and they're plotting it on a graph as to the relative risk. And so for liver cancer, all of that improves as you drink coffee. All right. Here's what it says. This is just the bottom line. The researchers calculated that drinking 2 cups of coffee daily reduced the likelihood of developing liver cancer by 27%. Now, I'm looking at the 2 cups of coffee. Man, when you go to like more coffee than 2 cups, it looks like the numbers are even greater. Now, this one to me, it doesn't really seem to be statistically that important. It says it lowers prostate cancer by 3%, or the risk of developing prostate cancer. Endometrial cancer, 12%. I don't really know if that's a big number, but the liver does. And so one of the compounds that is found within coffee, besides just, caffeine, there's a substance called cholinergic acid. And one thing that cholinergic acid does a very good job of is it helps the liver to kind of contract and purge. And so maybe one of the modes of action is when you get the liver to contract, you detoxify a little bit better. You start moving out the waste that builds up. And I know you understand this, but let me just try to make it sound simple. If you are breathing in oxygen, and you are if you're listening to me, and you're eating food, then your body is going to make waste, okay? It's just the way it is. Just like the engine of a pickup. You give it oxygen and gasoline, and what comes out the backside? You have exhaust. Not clean stuff you want to breathe in. You want it to go into the atmosphere. Well, you don't, but that's the way it is. And so the one relationship, so going backwards for a second, I think I've told y'all this story before, but I'm going to repeat it again. I was listening to a podcast one day, and in this podcast, they were talking about people that have just completely overcome the odds when it comes to overcoming cancer. And I didn't hear all of it, but they were discussing a book that was written on the topic where they followed 30 individuals that had had terminal cancer. And what we're talking about is we're talking about a metastatic cancer that's spread from its original organ or location to different parts of the body, and so basically it just overtakes the body. And so in each of these 30 individuals' story, they were all turned over to hospice, which means the doctors had said, we have used all the chemo and radiation and surgical procedures and drugs that we have to offer, and even experimental therapies. Nothing is doing anything to change the cancer, and you've got just a couple of 3 days to live, so we're going to turn you over to hospice. Well, in the book written on the topic, I need to look that up for you, my apologies, it demonstrated that all 30 of these people actually healed and overcame their cancer. But the one thing, I know this is not the only thing, but it's the one thing that I can tell you with confidence, they all had one technique in common. And you're probably asking, well, what is that, Dr. Morgan? Well, it was the use of a technique or a procedure called a coffee retention enema. And that's where an individual would take coffee, obviously cool down to body temperature, like 99 degrees, and they would try to retain many ounces of it, whether that's 6 or 12 ounces of the coffee, and it can be diluted. Some use the ground, some don't. But what happens is when you retain coffee in the lower part of your digestive tract or your colon for about 12 minutes, there is a tremendous purging effect of toxic waste and buildup. And so even though maybe you have never considered this, one of the problems with a cancer of any kind is when your immune system tries to defeat the cancer, it leaves this incredible toxic debris field that's hard to get rid of. And I'm not aware of any technique. I mean, I'm really not. I'm not trying to be dumb here. But I'm not aware of any technique in medicine where they try to help assist the cleansing, the purification, the detoxification of your blood or the body fluids. I'm just not. If there is a technique where oncologists routinely help to clean and purify and detoxify your body, please call me right now and explain to me what that is. But this technique called a coffee retention enema, well, that was one of the techniques that they used successfully, and people said that they had healing from cancer. Now, I'm not trying to overpromise it to you, but it's one of the ways that you help your body. It's like anything else. If you're not used to drinking water or, say, herbal tea, and what you are used to drinking would be soft drinks, well, don't you think you're voting to greatly improve your health by stopping cold turkey, the soft drink consumption? Even if it's a diet soda, I'm not so sure those aren't worse. If you begin to drink water and herbal tea, I promise you, your body knows that you're trying to help yourself. It's probably going to say thank you very, very much. You can start feeling better. Okay, here's another study right here. And this also is kind of similar to the garlic, but I just want you to know you got a lot of options here. And what they're looking at in this particular study, and I think this is appropriate given this time of the year when you have so many people that are stressed. I don't know about y'all, but I just listen to people talk about Christmas time, and the way that some people describe it, it might actually be the most stressful event for them in the entire year. And obviously, it should not be that way. It should be a cause for celebration. Anyway, but I can't change that, neither can you. It's just that Christmas is going to be really stressful. When it's stressful and the temperatures drop and the weather changes radically, and you know we're indoors with the heat on and it dries the air out, well, you might be prone to getting a cold of some kind. Okay, this came from the journal. It was published in 2013, the Journal of Ethnopharmacology. And what they're doing is they're looking at, in this study, they're looking at the antiviral effects of fresh ginger. Okay? Do you know what fresh ginger is? It is not the candied ginger that you find on the shelf at the health food store. It's not ginger chews. It is not ginger that's in a capsule sitting on a shelf. It's not ginger in a bag of dried tea. Fresh ginger is that gnarly looking root that you find in the produce section of a grocery store. So when you go in the store to shop and you find, can I tell y'all a side story real quick? I had this guy come to see me one time from the I'll just say the Middle East. And he was telling me that he suffered from horrible, horrible sinus problems and congestion. And he said, I found the cure. I said, well, what is it? He said, I chew up a chunk of fresh ginger every day. I have no more any suffering or problems with congestion and drainage. And I thought, that's brilliant. So there's a lot of ways that you can use it. But in this study, there was a researcher by the name of Yung San Chang. He's from the Keio Ishung. I know, I'm probably butchering the name of these medical universities in Taiwan. But what he did was he experimented with several different types of cells. But basically, what he did was he took human lung cells and epithelial cells from a human being. Of course, I don't even want to ask the question how he got those. Maybe from an adult donor, but I doubt it. So sorry for the negativity there. But what he did was he exposed these human lung cells to a virus called RSV. That's the respiratory syncytial virus. It really is hitting children so hard this year. I was reading a report. One of the cities or large cities here in Texas called San Antonio, Texas. Oh, my goodness. They have been completely covered up in their hospital system with multiple cases of RSV. And according to them, they're at the breaking point. They just can't take any more patients. They're at full capacity, which means RSV is a real problem in San Antonio. Of course, you know, the symptoms of RSV, not great. You know, who wants to have a child that has a hard time breathing and they feel yucky and horrible and their oxygen levels are low and they just, you're going, well, this is kind of scary. So this researcher by the name of Chang, he looked at whether or not exposure to fresh or to dried ginger extracts could protect the cells from the RSV virus, okay? And the thing of it is, what if you say, well, I don't want to chew up a chunk of fresh ginger. Well, okay, you could run it through your juicer. You might could cover it up with something else that would be a little bit delicious, like, let me see, what else can we run through the juicer? Maybe an apple or a lemon. Yes, I know ginger has a strong bite to it, but the name of the game is heal the child or heal the adult. Okay. Here's what the results say, and of course, I like studies like this because they just make it simple and to the point. They say that in this study, dried ginger did not have any effect whatsoever on the RSV virus. So that's good to know. Now you know there's only one option, fresh ginger. Well, does it work? They said that the higher the concentration of fresh ginger, the lower of the percentage of the cells that the virus could infect. And I'm kind of thinking to myself, well, this is interesting. That means if you give a pretty good dose, did that inhibit the RSV virus from entering the cells and replicating? You cannot look at the graph because I'm looking at it. Now, this is radio, like we've talked about. But it looks like it's really successful. Fresh ginger, therefore, has an antiviral effect. And so the conclusion is fresh zingiber officinal, that's ginger, is cheap and can prevent RSV infection largely by inhibiting viral attachment, internalization, and possibly stimulating what's called IFN beta secretion. That's interferon. Have y'all ever heard of interferon? That's what your cells release when they're under attack by a virus. Anyway, our results provide the first evidence to support its possible use to prevent human RSV infection. Anyway, so that's one study right there. Okay? If you want to join me on the radio and ask a question or make a comment, there is a phone line eventually open if nobody calls. Oh, the number is 903-586-5257. If not, I've got another study. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Well, good morning, sir. A quick question. If a person has a normal blood pressure, but they have a high pulse rate above what it should be, can you comment about that?
Well, ideally, if you look at long-term studies on human beings, the higher the pulse rate, the shorter the lifespan. So that's not me trying to be negative, but could you imagine if somebody has a pulse rate around 98 beats a minute at rest versus somebody that has one at 62? But what is the pulse rate we're talking about?
About 140.
Oh, well, they probably have AFib.
Okay. Can you comment on that, what that is and what to do?
Well, okay, there's a lot of moving parts to this.
All right.
So let me just kind of break it down, and I'm going to try to make it sound overly simplistic.
Okay.
If this individual is used to drinking lots of caffeinated beverages or energy drinks or soft drinks with caffeine, please beg them to stop immediately. And what we can do is we can find out if the pulse rate starts to go from 140 back down again. They probably need to go to their doctor as quick as possible. The other thing that I want you to consider prayerfully is we need to give this person some baking soda. And I want to see if baking soda, it could be easily a half a teaspoon, stir it in water. You know what baking soda looks like. It looks all milky when you first put it in water, but yeah, it will turn clear after you stir it for 3 hours. I'm just joking. Okay. Just for 10 okay. seconds. It will turn clear. Okay. But if you sip on that, that has a tremendous soothing effect upon the blood, especially. So almost all these reactions are overly acid reactions. That's one of the reasons why I'm recommending no soft drinks, no energy drinks, nothing with caffeine, nothing with high acid. And that's going to be sugar. And so is this person under a lot of stress or under no stress?
Mm-hmm. Very little stress.
Okay. Can they feel their heart skipping beats or fluttering or flopping around in their chest?
No.
Okay. I would look at hawthorn. Magnesium is essential. Cod liver oil might be important. But those are the most important things they can do right now to see if this calms it down. The other thing that I would do is, and let me just say it this way. One of the studies that I read this morning, they were looking at the idea of people that have a high blood pressure and rapid heart rate. And I realize your friend doesn't qualify for all of that because the blood pressure is normal. Mm-hmm. But what they noticed in the study was when a person is a shallow breather, meaning they don't breathe very deeply and efficiently, that's when they tend to retain excessive amounts of sodium, thus causing the blood pressure to go up. So one of the ways to fix this is to do those deep breathing exercises. And so with a rapid heartbeat, What you want is you want them doing what's called box breathing, where they're just taking about 4 breaths a minute. And if you don't know what box breathing is, you could just very easily go onto YouTube and watch a video. But here's how it works. You can, it's a lot of variations for this, but let me just tell you the simplest ones. You inhale for 4 seconds. That means it takes you 4 seconds to take a breath in. So I know that makes sense. Then you hold that breath for 4 seconds. And then you blow out slowly for 4 seconds, and then hold that for 4 seconds and start over again. So it doesn't take a mathematical genius to figure out you're only breathing maybe 4 times a minute. But you're trying to see if you can reset and calm down the vagus nerve. And it may be that she has a situation where she's just got too much adrenaline coursing through her veins. If it's too much cortisol, the easiest way to determine that is when they lay down at night, they can't fall asleep easily. Do you know anything about this lady's sleeping?
No, it's apparently normal.
Okay. Is somebody spiking her food with caffeine or speed?
Maybe drinking too much coffee.
Well, that would be the first thing that I would cut out.
Okay.
And just see, but, you know, when you're trying to, and this is the next article that I have in front of me, it's about pomegranate juice. I don't know if you've ever heard anything about pomegranate juice being good for the heart and blood pressure, but it is. It really is. Or eating a pomegranate. Now, if you stand at the sink and you eat an entire pomegranate within 5 minutes, you're going to have diarrhea. Don't do that. And so there's got to be some way to figure this out, but she needs to start going with the really deep breathing exercises, because we're trying to get the CO2 levels up and calm down her body.
How much pomegranate could one eat? A third, a half?
Well, can I just say the juice to make it sound simple?
Okay.
She could easily drink a glass of the pomegranate juice a day, and if she wanted to dilute it in water, that's fine too.
All right.
I just coined a new phrase: a glass of pomegranate juice a day keeps the cardiologist away. I'm sure that's not going to stick.
Oh, that's great.
And so she wants to be able to calm down. They've done studies also when the heart rate is very rapid. If somebody holds your hand and starts caressing and rubbing your fingers and your palm, that helps calm the heart rate down also. So since you're the only one that understands this, it's your job to go over and hold her hand and rub it and caress it.
All right. Very valuable.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. I hope these things help. I'm really rooting for her.
Okay, thanks.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. You're listening to a program called Health Essentials. The radio station is 90.3 FM, KBJS. The number here at the station, if you'd like to call me and ask a question, especially one that's related to natural healing. We're talking about things that God himself has created that are so good for us, like the pomegranate. The number here at the station is 903-586-5257. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Yes, good morning, Dr. Morgan. Would you please answer or give a comment on when you're doing the intermittent fasting and you have to take vitamins and so forth in the morning, does that affect the outcome?
No. Now, let me ask you this. Do the vitamins on an empty stomach, does that upset the stomach at all?
Not usually.
Okay. No, I don't really think it will.
So you can go ahead and take your vitamins and stuff?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if you were trying to do a timing deal where you wanted to get, like, for example, magnesium or fish oil in the morning, I think that'd be just fine.
Okay. How much magnesium are you supposed to have per day?
Well, every human being is biologically different, so some people need more and some people get by with less. But I would say if we looked at all the studies, you probably want to come close to almost doubling what the RDA is for the average person.
Okay.
Because your body will use it up and put it to use. It won't go to waste.
Well, we don't want it to go to waste if you pay for it.
Now, that's right.
Do you want the chelate or what particular type of magnesium?
Well, and yeah, that's what you're looking at. So, for example, if somebody said, there was a, one of the articles that I looked at just briefly this morning was about boys that have ADHD. Have you ever heard of that before?
Yes.
They were saying that if they took a form of magnesium called magnesium threonate, that all of a sudden they started sleeping much deeper and better. And what they probably did was they got L-theanine from tea, and they probably chelated it to magnesium, and thus it was magnesium 3 and 8. And so these boys all of a sudden started sleeping deeper and better, because you know what speed does. Well, if you give a boy speed like Adderall or Ritalin, they don't sleep so hot. Or it may take them a lot longer to fall asleep because they're on speed. So, yes, you can use everything from magnesium glycinate, magnesium lactate. Those are easy ones to use.
But you can get too much, then that causes diarrhea, doesn't it?
Yeah, it can. I mean, the one that'll do that is called magnesium oxide and magnesium citrate. So, I'm not trying to make a joke here, but if you went to Walmart and said, well, looky here, it's only 95 cents. I'll get a big liquid bottle of magnesium citrate. I think I'll drink the whole thing right now. Well, guess what's going to happen? It's going to clean you out like you've never been cleaned out before. See, magnesium citrate is what they use when they're trying to flush the colon before somebody submits to a colonoscopy.
Correct. Yes.
So it does serve a good purpose, but you can't overdose the magnesium citrate.
But the magnesium is good for many things in the body.
Oh, my goodness, yeah. Even if you just looked at a woman, it keeps her muscles stronger. She usually has much stronger bones. I mean, if you ask me which is most important, calcium or magnesium for bone strength and preventing fractures, it's magnesium, hands down.
And that would be your teeth also.
Exactly, that's right. Absolutely, yes. That's a very, very good point you made. So magnesium helps keep the teeth strong. You know what happens when children eat lots of sugar and drink lots of soda waters? They have to go to the dentist a lot. And that is very, very bad, because when you, if you wreck the teeth when they're young, guess what they're going to have when they're older? One problem after the other. Hey, you know what I read the other day? They said that if people use a mouthwash twice a day, their risk of developing diabetes increases by 50%. And it says it doubles a woman's risk of developing high blood pressure. And so there you go. When you use an alcohol-based mouthwash, like, I shouldn't say Listerine, so I won't. But when you use something like that, you're killing off all the good beneficial bacteria that create a barrier against sickness in your mouth. And so there's the proof to me. Don't ever use, you know, these hard antiseptic mouthwashes. They cause disease.
And there's a recipe on the internet saying that if you use mix half Listerine, half hydrogen peroxide, and one tablespoon of baking soda, and mix all that up and use that for your teeth, it will clean the, you know, the tartar and so forth off and make them shine.
Well, maybe it will, but at the expense of killing all the good beneficial bacteria that are supposed to be there. And when you remove the good, guess what fills in the gap? The bad. So I know that, but that would be a very, very short-term, nearsighted solution.
Well, we don't want that.
That's like taking antihistamines every day. You could say, I cannot fall asleep unless I take a Benadryl. Well, yeah, you can fall asleep with Benadryl and stay asleep. But the problem is it's going to lead to Alzheimer's or dementia. I mean, that's the number one class of drugs that leads to just a severe cognitive decline. You don't want them.
One last question. What causes the thickness for toenails?
Poor blood flow.
So that means we walk in the yard.
That's one of them. You know what the other thing you can do is? Okay, I know this sounds kind of crazy. I have come across so many people that just don't even know what the word hygiene means. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Of course.
Okay. So if they have a problem with their foot and they want me to examine it, I'm thinking to myself, Roy, how many times do you have to remind yourself, tell these people to bathe before they come in? It's just almost too, I'm not joking, it's too much. I have had such, this year alone, I can't even tell you how many people I've seen that smelled so horrible that I thought, has anybody loved them enough to tell them to start using, but they need to spend more time in hygiene. So when it comes to the feet, I really think when it comes to, if you want your feet to be in good shape, I really think that you ought to practice like really scrubbing them down really, really good with a bar of soap. And they actually make these natural bristle brushes that you can really scrub the toenails really good with. But after you really scrub and clean your toes and your feet really good, man, this might be an application for some extra virgin olive oil. I mean, I'm thinking your husband has nothing better to do with this time than to anoint your head and your toes with oil and rub it in there. But what happens is when you get the good extra virgin or the unfiltered extra virgin olive oil, it has chlorophyll and it has carotenes and it has so many nutrients. And those will soak in directly to your feet, but by rubbing and massaging your feet, you really are greatly helping blood flow. And so just a little bit of care every day on your feet can go a long way to prevent the toenails from thickening. But usually, in my mind, if the toenails become thicker, that's a sign of what I would call poor lymphatic circulation. So if a person is able, there's a really good case right there for probably walking an hour a day to reverse all that. So just like I've talked about in the past, the studies on people that have horrible varicose veins, you can't correct those in one day, but you can greatly improve them over time. And walking is part of that.
Fantastic.
Okay. Well, I hope that helps.
It does. And you have a blessed day.
Thank you very much. Merry Christmas and God bless you and your family.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, there's a phone line open. The number is 903-586-5257. Okay. Here we go. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Yes, I have a 2-year-old granddaughter that has, she's been through a lot, but I wonder if there's anything that we can naturally give her. She has a terrible, terrible temper. She will slap things out of your hand. She screams. And I know at 2 years old, it's hard to diagnose ADHD.
I know. No, we're on the same page on that topic.
And I'm sorry?
I said we're on the same page on that topic. I agree with you. And the thing of it is, I don't even, at this point, I don't know that I'm overly concerned whether somebody recognizes it with an official, you know, diagnosis.
I can barely hear you. I'm so sorry, but I can barely hear you.
Okay, can you hear me now? Because I'm looking
a little bit better, yes.
Okay, I'm looking at the numbers here, and it shows that I'm at a full bar. But thank you for telling me. I appreciate that. Okay, I read an article this morning that it was about men that had severe anger problems. And I realize a man with severe anger problems is not the same as a child that's 2 years old. But you know what they tested and they found that worked?
What?
Cod liver oil.
Cod liver oil?
Yes, ma'am. And so at the age this 2-year-old is right now, their brain is really, really rapidly developing. And cod liver oil is one of the best brain foods of all time.
Hmm.
And so if you could give the kids some cod liver oil, maybe it's one that's flavored with like lemon or strawberry or orange flavor. I think the lemon one's my favorite. I've tried them before. But what you're doing is you're trying to... What now?
Could you mix it in with like when they're having their juice and their little...
Absolutely. Don't tell them anything. Don't say, hey, look what Grammy's doing. I'm putting some rotten fish oil in your beverage. Don't do that. Mm-hmm. But that's one of the things. Now, but in this study, it was a 6-week study, but it greatly reduced the expression of anger in men. And so maybe we could think of it a different way. Maybe she's acting out because she's dealing with some brain inflammation, which is highly likely.
Mm-hmm.
So if I had a child in front of me that had anger, obviously I would examine them to try to find out where the problem's coming from. But can I just give you like multiple ideas here and see what works?
Sure.
Okay.
Now, this child, my grandson got divorced, and
he got
custody of the little girl because the mother didn't want to raise her.
Mm-hmm.
So that could play into her, you know.
Of course. Does the child seem agreeable to be hugged and kissed and held and played with?
Oh, yes. Yes,
okay, so definitely. The more that you can hug and touch the kid, the better this is going to be. But we need to
that's all the time.
Okay, good. Well, don't stop doing that. You're doing great. Man, I'm so proud of you. So what I would do is give the kid cod liver oil.
Okay.
There's one particular spice that is used to flavor food. It's called saffron.
Uh-huh.
And what you may have to do is you may have to order saffron in a capsule form and just open up a capsule, and you might just consider saffron, because saffron has the most incredible ability at calming down inflammation of the brain in children. And I know this because there are studies that have been done on kids that have been horribly, horribly abused. And I want to say, the study that I'm thinking of, it was based on children that were highly abused in a foster care situation, which is not this little girl's deal. But still, mm-hmm. what she's gone through to lose her mother, that's bad enough.
Right.
Would you believe me if I told you they have done some studies recently and they have actually found out that single fathers do much better at raising kids than single mothers do? Would you believe that?
Oh, yeah, that's kind of hard to believe.
It is hard to believe, but in the reality, single fathers, if you look at children over the lifetime, once they grow up, they function much better if they're raised by a single father than a single mother. Now, obviously, that's not the way that God designed it. God designed a mom and a dad to work together as a team to raise the kids before the Lord. So saffron can be really good. Now, the other thing that I'm thinking of is there's a substance called monosodium glutamate, or MSG, and that's going to be in all fast food. So if you take the kid through a drive-thru and say, do you want a Happy Meal? Well, you're asking for MSG.
Mm-hmm.
Or let me say it a different way. You're sitting in church with your granddaughter tomorrow morning, and somebody comes along and says, hey, how would you like about 5 Starburst fruit chews? The kid's going to be bouncing off the pews in about 10 minutes, right?
Right.
Because of all the sugar and the chemicals. So if she needs something sweet, guess what that's called? Apple juice. Yeah. Or giving her an apple or a banana or fruit. But
she
when
loves that.
Good, y'all are doing so well. So just make sure the child doesn't have any MSG. For the most part, that's going to be in store-bought junk food, like, you know, nacho cheese flavored spicy chips, Cheetos, stuff like that. But
mm-hmm.
fast food that has breading, so that'd be chicken nuggets.
Mm-hmm. Well, how much of the saffron
I'd probably say a half.
What's the dosage? And how
well,
much?
for a 2-year-old, you could easily give them 1 to 2 teaspoons a day, and it'd be fine.
Okay.
You could actually make popsicles for it. You could blend up a banana. You could put strawberries in it. Yeah, you could put the cod liver oil in that. And
yeah.
Say, hey, sweetheart, you want a popsicle? They would say, of course. So that's one of the ways you can do it. And the saffron, I'm just guessing maybe a half a capsule.
And the saffron what?
1/2 of a capsule.
Okay. I really appreciate this information.
Oh, you're so welcome. I'm so glad to help you.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome, and I wish you the best. What a good woman you are, taking care of your granddaughter.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you, ma'am. Bye-bye.
Bye.
The study that I referred to was not in children. It was with very, very angry men. You're thinking I'm making this up. I'm really not. But stuff like that kind of catches my eye, because you always wonder, well, what does it take to help the body to function properly? So do you know what I'm saying? You've got to have a certain amount of nutrients just to make sure that your emotions are stable. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning. I am entering my 5th week of shingles.
Where is it located on your body?
It's on the torso, on the right side, back and front. All the blisters were healed the first week. I was on an antiviral medicine 3 times a day. but it's the pain. It starts in the back, like somebody hits you with a baseball bat, and it goes around and then and under the breast, and then it goes into the breast.
Oh, no. I'm so sorry. That's horrible.
I'm on gabapentin now, and I also take tramadol for pain.
Mm-hmm.
I sleep a lot because I don't take drugs per se, prescriptions, just vitamins. And I do vitamin D, zinc, C. Is there anything that I can do to make this go away?
Well, one of the things that I want you to consider, there's a supplement called resveratrol.
How do you spell it?
Oh, no, you're going to put me to the test this morning. Okay. R-E-S-V as in Victor, E-R-A-T-R-O-L, resveratrol.
Okay.
And the problem is the S is pronounced more like a Z, so you can get where I'm saying resveratrol.
I got it.
And so that's a polyphenol compound. You find a little bit of it in blueberries. You find some of it in grapes. You find a lot of it in red wine. I am not recommending you drink two bottles of red wine this morning. That's not my recommendation. But you can get resveratrol that comes from a plant called Japanese knotweed, kind of like a knot in a rope, K-N-O-T, knot.
Okay.
And so if you'll start taking that, that has been shown... most likely a health food store.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know where you live.
In Jacksonville.
Okay, so run by a health food store today, or somebody's got to have it, but it's called resveratrol.
Okay.
And can I just have freedom to speak covertly this morning?
Sure.
Okay. There's a substance produced by the human body that's formed by your kidneys called urea. And in old school medicine, that was the compound they always applied to stop what's called a postherpetic neuralgia to the lesion site. And so what a person would do is they would take their own urea and they would apply it directly to where the pain is to see if it greatly diminishes.
Are you talking about urine?
Ma'am, I would never be overt like that on the radio.
Oh, okay.
maybe, but that's what stops the shingles. The other thing... There was a product years ago that used to be by prescription only, but now it's over the counter. It's called Zostrix. Z-O-S-T-R-I-X. Zostrix.
But it's
based on cayenne pepper, and what you do is you rub it directly to the area of pain to stop the postherpetic neuralgia, to make the pain stop. It just makes it heal.
It's a cream then?
Yeah, it comes like, it looks like a tube of toothpaste.
Okay.
Or the other product is called capsaicin P.
What? I'm sorry. How do you spell that?
Okay. Let me write that down.
I'm okay. Drugged up. That's why I'm...
Oh, no. You're fine. I heard you say you were on gabapentin, so my heart goes out to you. Capsaicin is C-A-P-S-A-C-I-N. I may have misspelled it, but it's called capsaicin P with a capital P.
Is it a cream also?
It is, yeah. It comes in a tube like toothpaste.
Okay.
I would not want to brush my teeth with capsaicin P.
Okay.
It's made from cayenne peppers.
Alrighty.
But when you apply it topically to the area, do it over and over again. But what it does is it really helps heal the expression of all this pain you've got. Or the other thing that I'd look at is thymus extract. Anytime you cannot get the body to heal from a virus, you think thymus.
How do you spell that, please?
T-H-Y-M-U-S, thymus.
Okay, is that a pill or a cream?
It's a pill that you take orally, but what it does is it greatly bolsters your immune system to go heal the area, which is what you want.
Okay, would that be like from a health food store? Also?
Yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm. Health food store.
Okay. The reason that I'm asking all of this, I cannot drive because I'm so drugged up all the time.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a friend that can go pick them up for you?
Yeah, that's why I have to have it spelled so they can go do that.
Good. Then you have a great friend. Give them the spelling and start doing these things. But I'm rooting for you. I want you to heal fast.
Okay, well, thank you so very
much. Yes, ma'am. Thank you, and have a great day. Bye-bye.
Bye.